And and what we're going to do now is we do an interactive summary of the lecture. So I will start, and so the something which is a common question when you go to a lecture, you may ask yourself, well, what is this lecture all about? Can we do a summary of the lecture? Well, let's see if we can do a summary. And if we start with the summary, the first thing we may want to point out is that this lecture was called Interventional Medical Image Processing. Yeah. And it was a nice lecture, but there was also some criticism. So it's no sun, but it's slightly cloudy, okay? So we have a cloud here. Yeah? No, it's not raining. It's only slightly cloudy. Yeah? But this is our cloud, and now we can think about the contents of the lecture. So what did we talk about in this lecture? Who remembers? There's oral exams in 2 weeks.
Tools.
Yes. Tools. What kind of tools do you remember? SVD. SVD. So what's SVD good for?
Everything.
Can you say some examples what SVD is good for? Yes?
Solving linear problems.
Can you think of a linear problem that you want to solve now with SVD? No, you don't know. What's a linear problem? Can you tell me a linear problem? A times x equals b. Excellent. Linear problem. This is an excellent example. This is all applied. You immediately realize the relation to the medical imaging here. Yeah? A times x equals b. So this is why our lecture is very applied, because we have these applied examples. Okay, and what can we do now with SVD? So we want to know x. This is what we want to know, exactly. And now we do the pseudo-inverse. And how do we do the pseudo-inverse? I know how to do the pseudo-inverse. I do a small plus here, and I got the pseudo-inverse, huh? Excellent. No, what's the pseudo-inverse? How do we get this guy here? It's A. What is it? A? A transpose A. And then invert. And then multiply with A transpose. Okay. Good. Is this what we wanted to have? No. Where's the SVD?
Nowhere.
Now you solved it, but you didn't use SVD. Yes. This is, if we do SVD of A, then we get U, sigma, and V transpose. Excellent. Who wants to go up front and write down the pseudo inverse? I shouldn't ask who wants, I should just decide on somebody to come up front. Yeah? Come. We will do this interactively. So now you get the great chance to take part of the video lecture.
Ah, that's prominent.
I will follow you.
Here's the chalk.
Good.
Can I just write it down? Or?
Yeah. So what is A plus pseudo inverse? Yes.
It was V.
Yes.
Sigma plus.
Yes.
Times U transpose.
Yes.
And sigma plus is basically if you have the singular values.
Yes, if you have the singular values.
1 over the singular value if the singular value is greater than 0, and 0
if it's 0, exactly. So you can add to this explanation that essentially these two are rotation matrices. So if you invert them, you just transpose them. And this is the pseudo-inverse of sigma with exactly 1 over sigma on the diagonal. So this is only a diagonal matrix. So a diagonal matrix you can invert by taking 1 over the elements on the diagonal. And it's a pseudo-inverse because there might be 0 elements on the diagonal, and the 0 elements are replaced with 0 again. Exactly. Very good. So, what else did we talk about? So, this was already interesting, and we can see we can do pseudo-inverses, and we can do rank deficiency, and all kinds of problems with this. What else did we have? Who remembers another tool? Projection models. Okay, and what was the trick with the projection models? What? Yes?
Homogeneous coordinates.
Yeah, what do I do with homogeneous coordinates?
Just add another dimension, and if you want to go back to the previous,
divide by the last. Yeah, oh, you want to write it down? Okay. You have the oral exam in 2 weeks, right?
Yes.
Yes.
But I do bibliographic, so this one.
Okay. Okay. Good.
If we have something in, for example, 2D, then we can transform it to 3D just by adding, how do we write this? Is equal to xy. And then to 3D, we would just xy. W, for example. And if you want to go back, we just divide by the W.
Yep.
So the other way around would be 2D to 3D to 2D. Nobody will view this from back there, but.
Yes, that's correct.
So we just.
Yeah, and you divide over the last component. And can you write down a projection matrix for the parallel projection, the orthographic projection, and the
orthographic projection is not too interesting. Basically just a projection matrix M, which should be 1, 1, 0. If you have a 3D point, then you project it to.
We wanted to use
the last part.
Yep.
And if we want to have a perspective projection.
Yes.
You just want to have. You just basically want to have exactly this. So, if we have a point that is at x, y, z, to have projected, we would like to have the 3 point would be. X over C and Y over C.
Yep.
So our matrix should be, I have to think, should be a, okay, then we have to add a fourth dimension with the 1, for example,
with
these coordinates, and then we would have 1, 1, 0, 1, 0, that's 1 here, if I am not mistaken.
Okay, now this is a 4x4 matrix and this is a 3x3 matrix. Now you have to explain to me.
Yeah, okay, if you want to have a projection, a parallel projection, you don't need this third part.
Because
we don't care, or we just add a 1 here. That should work.
That will do what?
Nothing.
This converts a 3D point to a 3D point.
Yes, we would have to add, of course.
And now you have a.
And this should work.
This converts a 4D vector to a 4D vector.
Yes. You have to do the calculation by dividing the last part. So you have to do this transformation.
Then you're converting a. So we, you were talking about going.
Yeah, it depends on if you. Yeah.
We were talking about projection models. So we want to convert 3D points to 2D points.
Yes.
And yes.
He would. Yeah. Okay. So what do you mean? This would have to be 0, 0, 0, I guess.
Yes.
And
so.
No. This would have to be 0. And I'm just now I'm confused.
Looks like yes. So how does this 4D the 4D vector is a.
As a homogeneous coordinate.
Is a 3D point in homogeneous
yes.
coordinate. So what are the elements of the 4D vector?
Yes, you have your position, and position, the last one is the homogeneous part. And we would divide, we want to have this, the parallel projection, we want it to be 1, so that if we divide, we don't lose anything. And yeah.
And yeah. So let's write an example. So let's say you have your 3D point. So your 3D point is x, y, and z.
Yes.
And you make it homogeneous by adding 1.
Yes.
Right? That's what you said. And then you multiply here. So the resulting vector here will be?
It should be x, y.
X.
Y and 1.
Y and 1. Exactly. So it needs to be this one for the parallel projection.
That's right.
And if you do the perspective projection?
It should be x, y, z.
Exactly. For the perspective projection, you want to have x, y, and z. And then your matrix
would be
and then the matrix would be
1, 1, 0s. And the last one has to be c, so 1, 1, 0. So like this. No, that's right. So that should be?
Yep, that looks good. Good. It's amazing how quickly you can adopt to my notation. Good. This were projection models and the refresher, and essentially this orthographic perspective is just the switch of the two numbers down here. Good. What else did we talk about? Did we talk about more tools? Did we talk about more tools? Variation in calculus is a tool, yeah. Yeah, yeah? You want to say something about the Euler-Lagrange equation?
I don't that.
Okay, for the Euler-Lagrange equation and the variation of calculus, the important point is that you get the concept that you're essentially extending the normal functional analysis to a concept where you have functions of functions, these functionals. And if you optimize a function with variables, what you do is you're looking for a stable point, and you typically find this minimum or maximum by computing the derivative and setting it to 0. So if you have an extremal point in a normal function, the derivative needs to vanish at this point. Right? This is a requirement that has to be fulfilled. And in variational calculus, you have a very similar concept. You also can characterize stable points. And this stable point is given by the Euler-Lagrange equation. Okay? So this is the important concept that you need to be able to convey. Yeah? Okay. And who remembers the Euler-Lagrange equation? Nobody remembers the Euler-Lagrange equation? Maybe you want to look that up. That could be a good idea to look at least the simple form of the Euler-Lagrange equation up. We don't need the different versions. If you have 2D and if you have multiple derivatives, we don't need those versions. Yeah, but at least for the simple case, it would be good if you can write down the Euler-Lagrange equation. The other ones you can look up. If you are working on a specific problem, you can look them up. Okay. Good. So let's clear, because we want to stay on our slide here, then we can skip a bit of this. So we're inflating this again because there's more things to talk about. Might remember. Okay. So we had the projection models. And sorry. Oh, I'm getting a cloud all wrong. Don't do that. And we had the variational calculus. Okay, good. What else did we talk about? What's the next big chapter? Pre-processing. Who said that? Very good. Do you want to tell us something about pre-processing? Who remembers the method of pre-processing? Scatter correction. What did I remark about scatter correction? It's just an example. Okay, so a scatter needs to be self-consistent, and if you have a scatter model, then it should be able to predict your scatter by maintaining self-consistency, and so on, and so on, and so on. And there's stuff you can do to simplify your model to get to a very fast solution, but you sacrifice it due to the in terms of the accuracy of the model. Okay, let's not talk too much about scatter correction. What else did we talk about? There was a Wessner's filter. Yes, there was a Wessner's filter. And before that was the structured tensor. And I'm missing another dash here. Yes? The bilateral filter was more down here, right? Let's do it here. Yeah, edges. Edges, gradients. Okay, maybe I should write more clearly. Bilateral filter. Okay, so how do we compute a gradient in an image? Yes? With finite differences, exactly. So you take in x direction two neighboring elements and in y direction two neighboring elements, subtract them, put them in your vector, then you go, you have your gradient. What is this structured tensor? It's the matrix of gradients. Yeah. How do we compute the structured tensor? You compute gradients, yes? Yeah, there was something like this. There was this. Do you remember? The Hessian matrix. Where did the Hessian matrix go? Yes? Yes, we get some eigenvalues. Okay. this is all correct. Now we need to order it a bit. So what comes first? So I did put some order in here. You may have noticed. Yes?
Let's try it. The matrix is on the top left, the first derivative
square. So okay. You're talking about gradients, you're talking about structure tensor or Wessner's filter? Structure tensor. Okay, structure tensor. Yeah. Here we go, structure tensor. Yes? It's a 2x2 matrix, yeah.
And then we have the first derivative squared of the potential in the top left.
The first derivative? The x derivative. So, yeah, so we do the x derivative squared, yeah?
And we have fx times fy.
fx times fy.
And bottom left.
And bottom left, the same. Fx, fy. And then fy squared. Can we now already compute? Yes?
It's very boring because it will always be rank one.
Yeah, this guy has rank one because this is nothing else than fx, fy, fx, fy transpose. So this is the this has only one eigenvalue if you do it this way. So what you need to do is you have to relax it over a neighborhood. Yeah. So you have to compute those values averaged over a neighborhood with some Gaussian filter kind of term. Yeah. So you have to average this over a neighborhood and then you do the eigenvalue analysis. Okay. And then you wanted to continue.
Then you get the eigenvalues.
And yes. Yeah. So if you have two eigenvalues, you have two edges in the same neighborhood, which means it's a corner. So if you have two large eigenvalues, you found a corner. What is if we have one large eigenvalue? You have an edge. So you have one dominant gradient direction. Yes.
We don't have one.
It's a flat area. So zero eigenvalues, two zero eigenvalues, or close to zero, you have a flat area. Exactly. And then somebody wanted to use a Hessian matrix. Who wants to tell something about the Hessian matrix? So what's the Hessian matrix? What do we have in the Hessian matrix? Yeah. What could be in here? In Hessian is how many derivatives do we have? It's second order, exactly. So second order. So there's only two directions in which we can derive. So yeah. So we can derive with did you say this? So you derive two times in x direction here in x, then in y, here in y, then in x, and here two times in y direction. This is your Hessian matrix. And the Hessian matrix is a description of second order derivatives. What do you get here? Yes?
Curvature.
So here we can do this eigenvalue decomposition again. And now we're counting eigenvalues. How many eigenvalues can we have at maximum? Yes? Two. And at minimum? We have two zero eigenvalues. No, there's always two eigenvalues. Yeah. But we can have two large eigenvalues. We can have one large and one zero eigenvalue. And we can have two zero eigenvalues. And in terms of interpretation, what do we get? Two large eigenvalues means? Yes? Two principal directions. So you have curvature in two directions. And what's something that has curvature in two directions? Yes? Not exactly. It's not edges. It's close. So let's say you have a curvature in this direction and at the same time curvature in this direction. Yeah, you have a blob. So two large eigenvalues will give you a blob. And if you have curvature in one direction and constant in the other, then you get a vessel. Yes, exactly. So you get a tubular structure. And if you have two zero eigenvalues, it's something flat. Okay? And now we already heard the term vessel. So where do we use this this Hessian thing? In the vessel.
It doesn't need to be flat, it's just the same.
Yeah, it's not really, it's no curvature. Yeah, no curvature. Yeah, correct. Yes, this goes to the Wesselness filter. Okay. And now can you remember this trick that Alejandro Frangi was using for the Wessel-less filter, how to construct it? So he had this trick that he is using...
He's using Gaussians to convert them to probabilities.
Yeah, so exactly. So he's using Gaussian functions or Gaussian-like functions to convert the measures to probabilities to values between 0 and 1. And the other trick that he's using vessels can have different diameters. So he's using a multi-scale approach. So you have to, this is also why Gaussians are nice, because you can easily increase the standard deviation, and then you're sensitive to different sizes of structures. So then you do this multi-scale approach, and you plug this into a Gaussian, and you compute a blobness. So you don't want to have blobs, but you want to have vessels. So he has this twofold combination. So he has the blobness measure and then the structureness measure. And a good vessel is something which has a lot of structure, but looks very little like a blob. Yeah? So you're looking for something with one large eigenvalue and not two large eigenvalues. And then you multiply this in this Gaussian function and add it up. Okay, so we have to speed up a bit. Sorry, we have to speed up a bit. Bilateral filter. Bilateral filter was this idea that you construct Gaussian kernels, but you construct them in a way that you are edge aware. So you include into the convolution term, you also include an edge distance. Yeah? So essentially, if you have something like this, there's noise, then there's a large step, and noise here again, you want to construct a kernel that looks like, that looks like this on the one side. So this is essentially a Gaussian, but it's cut off at the edge. And if you do it on this side, if you compute it at this point, you want it to look like this and this. So what you're doing is you're downweighting the other side of the edge, and there you only apply smoothing on this side of the edge and this side of the edge. It's the idea of the bilateral filter. And of course, you can just write the kernel down, and this is, of course, shift variant. Yeah? So you have different convolution kernels at different points in the image. And this is quite inefficient. So you can do it fast on graphics card in parallel, but there's ways to compute edge-preserving filter much faster. And there we go to the guided filter. The guided filter. And in the guided filter, we are using box filters. And we can compute box filters very efficiently with integral images. So you remember these integral images where in every element of the integral image, you have the integral of, so this is your image, and this is your integral image. And in the integral image, this point is the integral over here, and this point is the integral over here, over this area. And now if you want to compute this area here, then you take this area, the entire area, and then you subtract this area, and you subtract this area, and you add back this area. So only four operations for any rectangular area integral in the original image. And this way you can also do very large kernels very efficiently. So guided filter is using integral images. And it may also be a good idea to have a look at the objective function, how the objective function is constructed, and how it simplifies to the actual guided filter formulation. Yeah. So you remember that the guided filter starts with an objective function where you say you're looking for an image that is constructed from a guidance image, which contains the right edge information. And then the prediction image is just a linear prediction of the guidance image. So You have the guidance image times A plus B, and this gives you the filtered image. And then you have to develop ways of figuring out A and B, and they have very nice interpretation. Okay. We also talked about super resolution. Yeah? You remember super resolution? And this is essentially a reconstruction problem. So you can describe the point spread function and the different, so how you get from the high resolved image to the low resolved image, point spread function, downsampling, and so on. You can all write this down in a matrix. And then you're looking for, and it's an ILPOS problem, and you're looking for a good conditioned solution of the ILPOS problem, and you do that by applying regularization. Then the next part, after pre-processing, where did we go? I think we called this something like image analysis, image information extraction. I think it was image analysis. And first thing we did in image analysis was SIFT feature descriptors. You remember how the SIFT feature descriptor is a scale invariant feature transform, and it's doing a multi-scale approach, very similar to Wesselness, by the way. Wesselness and SIFT also both have this multi-scale approach, and you can determine those multi-scales very efficiently if you follow the SIFT principle. And you can actually combine the two to also do Wesselness quite efficiently. And then in SIFT, you first determine the predominant gradient orientation. So you do that by computing a gradient histogram, and you create one key point for every dominant gradient orientation. And then you have a determined scale and a gradient orientation. So then the feature patches that you get, they're rotation invariant and scale invariant. And then you are extracting a feature vector at every key point, which you can then compare for feature matching. Okay, what did we do next? SIFT. What was the next point after feature points? I think we did epipolar geometry, right? Epipolar geometry. And you should remember what the epipolar plane is, and that the intersection of the epipolar plane with the projection images forms a line. And then we also did this interesting extension that if you have X-ray images, every beam is a line integral. And if you then compute the integral over the line in one projection and the integral over the same plane in another projection, because the line and the projection is actually a plane in 3D, and you compute the integral over this plane in front view and in the other view, and if you have a parallel projection, then you're computing the same plane integral, and you can use that for motion compensation, for example. So this was already the application to current research project that we have. So epipolar geometry is a very nice computer vision method, but you can also do cool things in combination with X-ray imaging. And epipolar, we did follow up with? With the structure from motion, the factorization approach. And factorization was super cool, wasn't it? Yes. Who said yes? You? So that's plus 0.3 in the oral exam score, if you said yes. And I think all of you said yes, right? Okay, so the factorization. And in factorization, we had this nice idea that, again, in orthogonal projections, we can boil down our projection problem, multi-projection problem, that we have a set of observed points in 2D, and we put all of our observed points in 2D in some kind of measurement matrix. And in the entries of the measurement matrix, we observe an x and a y coordinate. And we did this, we removed the mean value from those points. Yeah? So in every projection, I'm observing the same set of points. So for every projection, I can compute an x and a y coordinate. And I can get this registered measurement matrix where I have x prime. So this is the point x and y coordinate in projection one, and this is point number one. And we can extend this to the projections, to the points and the projections. And what we actually can show is that we can decompose this into two matrices, and one matrix contains the 3D points. This is the structure part and the projection models. So we had the projection and the points in the structure. Yeah? And these were only two matrices. Yeah? So we can decompose our measurement matrix into two matrices where this only contained the projection axis, the two axes of the orthogonal projection system, and S contained only the 3D points. And then what we could do is we could pick this guy and decompose it, for example, with SVD. There we have U, sigma, and V transpose. And then we somehow have to split this up into P and S, into an estimate. And what we did in this case is, this is a diagonal matrix. So we took the square root of this matrix. And the square root we apply by applying the square root to every diagonal element. So we could get an estimate of P that is U sigma square root, and S would be sigma square root V transpose. And then we already have first estimates. And then we have to iterate this, because the factorization problem is, general problem of factorization is, there's an infinite number of such factorizations. So I can find any matrix Q that is, in this case, a 3x3 matrix, and I can put in Q on this side here, Q, and Q to the Q inverse on this matrix, and it's still a valid decomposition. So this is not unique. So we have to figure out Q. And we figured out Q by implying constraints, and we implied exactly that the two axes of the orthogonal system need to be perpendicular. And the other constraint that we applied is that the length of the two vectors needs to be one. And with those two constraints, we were able to estimate Q. And then we found a solution which predicted the points and the projection parameters at the same time from an image sequence. But remember, constraint, this is all in orthogonal. So if you go to perspective, you have to create an iterative procedure. And the other thing is, all points have to be visible in all projections. So if you run into occlusion and things like that, you can't apply it anymore directly. Then we went ahead, and we actually went to segmentation. And the segmentation algorithms that we came up with were the random walker. And you remember that there's a typo in the big matrix. Yeah? The sign is not correct in the slides that are uploaded. And there was the active shape models, the statistical shape models, and then the active shape model algorithm for actual segmentation. So this is a model-driven, so here we use a lot of data for the segmentation, and this is a bottom-up approach where we are very close to the image. And so here we had the image analysis, and last but not least, we went to registration, where we were using the variational calculus and the non-rigid registration. And also in the non-rigid registration, we've seen that this is essentially an optimization problem where we construct an objective functional. And this functional was composed of a data term And for the data term, we had the sum of squared differences and the mutual information. And for the regularization, we had curvature regularization and smoothness regularization. Yeah? Curvature regularization, and what else did we do? I think we were punishing gradients, yeah? Gradients and curvature. So this was the non-rigid registration. And then we went ahead to the interventional reconstruction, 4D recon. And we've seen that you can actually virtually freeze an object if you have some information like gating. So if you choose the same projection, the same projections in the same hard state, you can virtually freeze the image and then reconstruct this hard phase. But it may result in multiple sweeps. So you have to acquire a couple of times, and then you compose of different heartbeats one 3D image. Or what you can do as well is you can try to figure out how the heart was moving in between the motion, and then you can unwarp, or you can warp the motion into a fixed state. Yeah? So you deform the volume such that it is in the same state as the projection, then you back project, then you deform again, then you back project, then you deform again, and then you back project. So this way you can model the motion into the reconstruction process. And note, of course, if you have non-rigid motion, very complex motions, there is no guarantee that you have complete data. Okay, and then this is about it. That's the content of the lecture. Okay, and now remember how long we were talking about this. And in the oral exam, you only have to talk for 30 minutes. So you can easily fill 30 minutes with the contents of the lecture. More questions? Then we can end the semester, and looking forward to see you in the oral exam.